The Ulster Economics Podcast. The podcast that keeps you up to date with what is happening economy-wise in Northern Ireland. Telling you what you need to know, but not necessarily what you want to hear. It is better to be prepared for the economic environment we're operating in and not the world we would like to be in. Episode 23, The Fall. Sorry, no Jamie Dornan or Gillian Anderson on this podcast, just an economist and a mortgage broker chewing the fat. The fall refers to the continued fall in output, confidence and living standards, amongst other things, and we will major on the local mortgage market in a bit. But first, I'm delighted to be joined by Siobhan McAleer, Managing Director of The Mortgage Shop, which Siobhan founded in 1992 and which has become one of the largest mortgage brokerages in Northern Ireland and which also has branches in Great Britain. You're very welcome, Siobhan.
Thanks very much, Richard. Appreciate the opportunity.
No, we're delighted to have you and all your Christmas shopping done and...
Oh, absolutely not. I'm one of these people, it has to be at least December before I think about it, but soon.
Yeah, very good. Well, we'll come back to you in a bit, Siobhan, but first, just as way of background, in terms of another month, we had not one but two fiscal events. Last Thursday, Chris Heaton-Harris, the Northern Ireland Secretary of State, unveiled a mini-budget. Unlike the Kwarteng version, this was a mini fiscal event covering just public spending up to next April for Northern Ireland. A budget made in Hillsborough to largely address a £661 million made instalment overspend, which resulted from energy and inflationary pressures. Whilst a financial crisis has been averted, pressure on the local public finances remains. Meanwhile, the public sector pay awards fall well below the rate of inflation. There was nothing on the revenue side, but the bogeyman of potentially introducing water charges, which is a no-go area for local politicians, was raised by the Secretary of State. This card has been played before by previous Secretaries of State dating back to Peter Hayne to encourage a return to Stormont. Water charges, which would account for about £345 million of potential revenue, are part of the £616 million package of super parity measures that Northern Ireland citizens benefit from annually, but their peers in Great Britain do not. No shortage of fiscal challenges await a new executive. The devolution go-go years of the late 90s, early noughties, when fiscal goodies such as free prescriptions and free public transport for the over 60s were all the rage, is now a distant memory. The next decade will require Stormont to scale back and reform public services, and the sustainability of the £616 million of super parity measures will increasingly come into question. The more significant fiscal event during the month of November was the autumn statement on the 11th. This included the Office for Budget Responsibility's much-awaited economic and fiscal forecasts. As expected, the OBR painted a miserable picture of what lies ahead. The UK economy is already in recession, with Q3 2022 marking the first of a projected five successive quarters of decline. Indeed, the five-year period from the third quarter of 2019 to the third quarter of 2024 is set to be a full parliamentary term of zero economic growth. The starkest figures concern living standards, real disposable income per person, which is basically after tax and inflation-adjusted household income. It is set to fall by over 7% in the next 2 years. These are the two worst years for declines in living memory. Real disposable incomes, which includes welfare benefits and pension income, will go back to 2013 levels, while median real earnings will be back at the level they were at the start of the 2010s. Rising taxes are impacting as well as inflation, with the UK set to see its highest tax burden, that's taxation's share of GDP, in 70 years. We're entering a high borrowing, high debt and high taxation world. Despite lots more borrowing and tax revenue, public spending will remain tight. That's because of soaring interest rates. Debt interest will top $120 billion this year, which is more than the spend in any other department outside of health. Rapidly rising interest rates are also a concern for businesses and households, with concerns mounting about falling house prices the world over. This marks an about turn from the surge in global house prices which followed the pandemic. Swedish house prices have already fallen 14% from their peak, with the Sweden Central Bank expecting this to deepen to 18%. New Zealand's Central Bank is forecasting a peak-to-trough fall of 20%, with prices already down 11.5% since November's peak. One property seller in Auckland has offered to throw in a free Tesla to get a sale. For context, a Tesla in New Zealand is just over $72,000, and the property that was for sale was a cool $1.8 million. Canadian house prices rose by over 50% during the pandemic, but they have already fallen by 10%, with some analysts expecting a correction of 30%. A 30% drop in prices is normally considered to be a crash. It is a similar story in Australia, with residential property prices also on the slide, and US house prices recorded their first fall in a decade in July. So, what about the UK? Well, a weakening economy in the face of high inflation, spiking energy prices, and rising mortgage rates will certainly put downward pressure on home prices. Though I would caveat house price forecasts with a warning from Mervyn King. The former Bank of England governor described forecasting house prices as a mug's game. Nevertheless, the OBR expects Q3 2022 to mark the UK's house price peak, with a projected fall of 9% over the next 2 years. The OBR reckons UK house prices will stay below their recent peak for the next 5 years. Bear in mind, UK prices did rise by 26% since the pandemic, so a 9% fall still leaves prices almost 15% above Q4 2019 pre-pandemic levels. So what about Northern Ireland? According to the latest official statistics, Northern Ireland's residential property price index hit a 14-year high in the third quarter. In the 11 quarters since the pandemic, that is from Q4 2019 to the third quarter this year, the standardised residential property price rose by 26%. No local economist saw that rise coming back then. Just a reminder that in Northern Ireland's property boom, prices rocketed by 101% in 10 quarters from the first quarter of 2005 to the third quarter of 2007, before falling by 57% over the next 5.5 years. So what about the outlook? At barbecues over the past two summers, we will have heard chit-chat about the rise in house prices. Perhaps we will hear the reverse this Christmas or when next summer's barbecue season kicks off. A couple of months ago, there was an event featuring local economists and their anonymous forecasts. House price forecasts for the end of the end of 2023 range from a minus 10% fall to plus 6%. Just for the record, I was the outlier on the minus 10%. Where they end up is anyone's guess, but from an economy's perspective, it is activity in terms of mortgage activity, sales, and the rate of house building that is more important than price movements. We have already seen housing starts fall 19% year on year in the third quarter, which was the weakest third quarter since 2013. Meanwhile, completed housing units fell 14% year on year in the third quarter, and it marked the fewest finished properties for a third quarter for 7 years. Looking to the year ahead, we can expect to see a new season of the fall, be it economic growth, output, confidence, housing starts, completions, and living standards. But on a positive note, we should also see a fall in the rate of inflation, and hopefully mortgage rates may drift lower too as well. And it's the local mortgage market that I'm going to turn to now. And there's no better person than the mortgage shop's Siobhan McAleer to talk to on mortgage matters. So Siobhan, first of all, is the mortgage shop going to throw in any Teslas on any mortgage deals anytime soon?
Don't think so, Richard. I'm working on getting one for myself first, and then we'll go from there.
And I suppose my first real question is about it's a bit like that question, where were you when JFK was shot? And it's concerns Kwasi Kwarteng's mini budget, where we all know where we were when that happened, but it was what happened in the mortgage market. You obviously had a ringside seat in the week afterwards. Could you just describe sort of what the environment was like?
Well, you know, the mini budget, it hit a panic button for understandable reasons. You know, the media didn't cause it, but they certainly fed the frenzy to a certain extent. You know, and the predictable consequences for us was our branches were like revolving doors, very needy customers looking for reassurance. And, you know, our advisors were also shell-shocked. So they were actually struggling to find a way of reassuring them. But it was pandemonium is probably the only way, you know, you could describe it. Deals were being pulled. Deadlines were being set to get paperwork in. Advisors were working right through the night. It genuinely, and because we are a retail operation, which in a way is very good for the customer, it also put huge pressure on us. We were under massive pressure in terms of meeting the demand.
And you've been in the mortgage game since 1992. Have you ever seen anything like that in over the last 30 years?
Well, when we opened in September 1992, interest rates hit 15.4%. There's been a few shell shocks along the way. I suppose that was the one where literally you felt the effect so immediately. You felt customers' pain in terms of their dream homes. You know, we have a really healthy attitude to homeownership in Northern Ireland. We want to own our homes, but we also know what we want to pay for it. And then without notice, that budget is thrown up in the air. You know, it's a very, very scary time for people.
Yeah, because what happened was then, it was then the financial markets, their expectations of where the Bank of England interest rates were going to go. At one point, they were pricing in that bank rate would go to almost 6.5%.
Yeah.
And which, if you bear in mind, bank rate was 0.1%. this time last year, and just with the recent hikes, we're now up to 3%. And, you know, that must have been, you know, shocking for mortgage advisors, would-be customers, people looking to get a deal where it's almost, you know, totally changed from where things were a number of months ago.
Yeah, I think the issue is it is, you know, it has created a vulnerability. And vulnerability is a bit like a jack-in-the-box. Once it's out of the box, it's very hard to get it back in again. And it's also, you know, created a lot of unsettlement. You know, you have our advisors can advise people, but at the end of the day, the customer will choose what they want to do. And there was so much panic that they just wanted the security of five-year deals. Deals that, you know, they're now paying £500 a month more maybe than their next door neighbour who had another 3 years to run on their 1.75% deal. So all of that, you know, it creates uneasiness and added pressure.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the numbers a few weeks ago just for, say, a £150,000 repayment mortgage, and the rate that the fixed rate that somebody could have got back, say, in April or May relative to what they could have got a few weeks ago, and their monthly payments are going up by 50%. Yeah. And that's on top of the cost of living crisis, energy prices, food prices, and all of those kind of things. And are you seeing the cost of living crisis hitting the mortgage market now, even before we got to the latest increase in mortgage rates?
I'm not sure we've seen the full effect of it yet. I think, you know, people obviously did have some reserves, or most people have a little bit of reserve. I suppose the big concern, you know, apart from the increased mortgage rate, is that the ancillary products that are important, you know, protection, income protection, they're the first things that people will decide to drop, and yet
life,
they
life
should
cover and
yeah, they yep. should be the last thing. So, you know, I think the consequences are yet to be seen. I think come the new year, we will see, you know, the effects of it a bit more.
Yeah, and in terms of the mortgage rate, so now it's financial markets were at a stage expecting bank rate to rise at almost towards 6.5%. Today, it's now looking like between 4.5% to 4.75%. So that's in terms of bank rate, and personally, I think we'll not even see four. We'll not even see 4.5%. It'll maybe be 4 or 4.25%. But what has happened to mortgage rates? We had the initial kind of panic, as you highlighted. What has happened, say, in the last few weeks? There's been some improvement in terms of mortgage rates. I heard that mortgage rates were back down, some fixed rates back down below 6% for the first time since the pre-quasi mini budget period. What's been happening lately?
Yeah, I mean, what happened for a while after the mini budget was that, you know, the deals just weren't competitive. The lenders weren't competing against one another for business, which is what we need to get competitive deals. We can see that starting to come back slowly. You know, you will get a decent 5-year fixed rate now for, you know, well under 6%. So it's starting to get better, but it has a long way to go because, you know, Richard, you can talk about the bank base rate, but for mortgage people, that's fairly irrelevant because what they're paying, you know, the average bank is charging a variable rate of 6.5%, 6.7%. You know, the markets, the swap markets are going down, but the lenders and banks are not reducing their variable rates.
Yeah, and I suppose the hope is, and my expectation is that should move in the right direction in the coming weeks and months. But obviously, would-be mortgage purchasers would want that to move much lower, much faster than it may likely be the case. I suppose in terms of then, there's also mortgages were being pulled, but it's also the type of mortgages, and, you know, was it like the high LTVs, and, you know, are they the people who are bearing the brunt of the mortgage difficulties at the minute?
Well, once again, it does seem to be, you know, the first-time buyers that are, again, you know, at facing massive roadblocks in terms of getting a mortgage. You know, first of all, 95% deals out there are not competitive, which is bizarre given we have the government guarantee scheme that was designed to give the banks, you know, I suppose an incentive to produce more competitive 95% deals. That just hasn't happened. So,
and that was just like the banks would receive an insurance, government backed sort of yeah. insurance for the higher level of LTV.
That's right. It's something that used to happen way back 20 years ago, where they guaranteed between 75% and 100%. And this was reintroduced as an incentive. But the reality is it hasn't really been worth the paper it's been written on. Because
banks are still it's not encouraging banks to lend at those rates, is that right?
At competitive rates. They're nearly designing the rates not to be that competitive at the moment, even though they talk about having loads of money to lend. In terms of the 95%, it's not happening. And then if you look at the affordability calculators, because, you know, having struggled to get a deposit together because of cost of living, they're then faced with an affordability calculator when they go to the lenders, which seriously restricts how much they can borrow. So realistically, they can't borrow enough to buy a house. If you're a low income, or you're a low income earner, you know the largest provider of mortgages in the UK. If you earn £20,000 on a single income, they will barely lend you more than £35,000 at the moment. Yet, if you earn £65,000 to £70,000, you can go out and look at your £500,000 house. The balance is all wrong in terms of support.
Yeah, and the median earnings, annual earnings in Northern Ireland would be £30,000. Yeah. So. So, and in terms of, like, I was speaking with some of our mortgage people at the bank yesterday, and they were talking about how some of the behaviours have changed of people who are coming looking for mortgages, where they're now, with the combination of interest rate hikes and the cost of living crisis, they're now looking at different properties, whether it's the issue of doing up a house or fixing up a house is now being sort of shunned because of the additional cost and uncertainty over that. Are you seeing any sort of changing behaviours in the people who are walking into the mortgage shop?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of our people would come and their intention would be then to take a personal loan or to help with home improvements. I mean, that's just not an option now. So you find them veering away from properties that need any work done.
And in terms of the first time, if we look back to the Northern Ireland's housing crash previously, on the run-up to that, the first-time buyer was kind of snuffed out of the market from the investor and the rise of the buy-to-let landlords. What's happening in the buy-to-let market at the minute? Because I know a lot of the attractiveness of that over the years has dissipated with George Osborne removing tax relief on mortgage interest rates. And what we had in the autumn statement was another kind of kick in the teeth for the investor, with capital gains tax annual allowances are due to be lowered from $12,300 per year per person to $6,000 in April, and then reduced again, halved again to $3,000 in the next year. What's the buy-to-let market like at the minute?
That's a sector that's hanging on by a thread. You know, as you said, all the benefits have been eroded over the years, and, you know, they're not stopping. You know, even if you look at the energy certs, you know, albeit they don't apply in Northern Ireland, it's UK-based lenders who are issuing the mortgage offers, and there'll be conditions that apply to the energy ratings of the property. So if you add that to the fact that, you know, a £700 a month renter will get you a mortgage of £69,000-£70,000, you know, the market is just becoming way too difficult, and it's hard to see really any benefits when they're being charged 6.5% to 7% on top of that. So for the, you know, for the private landlord, it's hard to see a future.
Yeah, and I suppose then in terms of the positive or silver lining to that is maybe for the first-time buyers, because one of the problems we have faced in Northern Ireland is the lack of stock, and we may see increased, you know, the number of private landlords increasingly moving towards the exit and looking to put those on the market, and then those will become available for first-time buyers?
Absolutely. And, you know, the rental market, particularly around Belfast, I mean, that is your first-time buyer type home, which would be just a healthy move all around, because you do find privately owned homes are cared for more. There's more put into them in terms of community. So, yeah, I mean, that could be a positive that comes out of all of this.
And then what about the co-ownership market is another segment of the market, which, again, is designed to get those people onto the property ladder who were the part rent and part they purchase a house by partly renting a portion of it and also purchasing it. What's co-ownership looking like at the minute?
You know, co-ownership has always been perceived as the helping hand, and it, you know, it definitely has, particularly for lower-income buyers. And I think, you know, there's always going to be a future for shared ownership. But if you look at it at the moment, you know, the bank that produces, you know, the co-ownership, the bulk of the co-ownership offers in Northern Ireland are charging 6.7%, which again, at a at a mortgage rate of 3%, huge margins for them, and again, nearly making, you know, more difficult for those who can afford it least. So I think there does need to be, and it's not a huge criticism of them because they're the only ones that are sort of brave enough to go into the market. So, you know, it's not without sort of a certain amount of gratitude as a broker, but it just doesn't seem right that 6.7% for people who can afford it least.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose if you're looking ahead to next year, what is it that concerns you the most about the mortgage market or the wider economy?
I suppose the tightening budgets that I think we're going to see more in January. And again, I worry about the cancellation of, you know, income protection, life, critical illness, all that sort of stuff. That would be immediate concern for us as a business. In terms of the market, I mean, I'm positive about next year. I think the start of the year we'll see, a bit of a sea change. We're going to have, we'll hopefully be over the shock of what happened. Christmas will be out of the way. World Cup will be out of the way. We do like our home ownership in Northern Ireland, and that's a cultural thing that won't change. So I think if lenders play their part, reduce rates, make the deals more attractive. And I think they're in a position to do that. Whether, you know, the Chancellor puts the rates up or not, there's definitely room for improvement there. So I think, you know, all things being equal, I see a slow improvement in the first quarter. And my real hope that would be that come next summer, we're looking at mortgage deals that were similar to last summer. And if we get there, we won't be in a bad place.
And just finally, one of the things which we've seen, notable features of the property market that we've seen, particularly since the pandemic, has been the flow of people from Great Britain coming back into Northern Ireland. And that has increased demand, and particularly from the likes of London and the South East, where people are coming with a lot bigger pay packets than they have over here. Is that sort of demand from Great Britain, has that been something that you've seen coming through in terms of the mortgage shop?
Yeah, we saw it, and we see it stopping now to a certain degree. I mean, we actually had a couple of examples of people who were moving back to South Belfast, and when the mini budget happened, the employer changed the arrangements they had organised for them, and their purchase fell through in London. So we've seen a couple of examples of that. So I think the issue here is the problems that we have here are also happening across the water. So I think there's a big slowdown in that trend.
Yeah, and if it's more difficult to sell a property and across the water, then that makes it more difficult to then relocate back here as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, Siobhan, so we've talked about the first-time buyer market, the buy-to-let market. What about the remortgage market?
Well, the remortgage market has mostly been about product transfers. Obviously, there's been a huge demand because all of a sudden people's mortgages are on the radar and they're keen to look at their deals. So what's actually happening is that product transfers, which, as you know, is, you know, the customer stays with their existing lender, but they offer them an attractive deal or a deal to stay with them. So we're finding most remortgages are around product transfers now, as opposed to moving to a new lender. Actually, there's very sort of positive news on this because, you know, there's been an attitudinal sort of sea change on how banks are dealing with their existing customers. You know, they don't want to lose their back book. They know the customers are good payers and they're offering them attractive deals to stay with them. Now, go back 6 months ago and you wouldn't have got an attractive deal with your existing lender. You would have got a deal. So, you know,
almost like, almost like a loyalty penalty?
A loyalty penalty. Honestly, a penalty for inertia. So the people who didn't actively go out and look and left it to the last minute were offered a deal, which was never competitive. So, you know, I suppose it's a bit bittersweet. It's good news for the consumer. They're definitely getting better deals from their banks. That's a positive note that's happened.
That's great, Siobhan. Thanks very much for joining us today for the podcast. That was Siobhan McAleer of The Mortgage Shop.
Thank you.
Looking at the incoming economic data and surveys for Northern Ireland during the month of November, what's hot and what's not? All 12 UK regions posted a contraction in business activity in October, according to the PMI surveys. For Northern Ireland, it was the sixth successive monthly fall, with all four sectors, construction, retail, services and manufacturing, reporting a decline in output and activity. It was a similar story with new orders. They also fell for the 6 month running, and October's rate of decline was the steepest outside of the pandemic since January 2011. Cost pressures and economic uncertainty were cited as key factors behind the fall in demand. Export orders also fell for the 45th month running. Business confidence for the year ahead, based on the PMI, sank to a 26-month low, with all four sectors expecting lower levels of activity in 12 months' time. Inflationary pressures amongst businesses remain elevated, but local firms did raise prices at their weakest pace in 19 months in October. There are also some signs of global inflationary pressures easing. For example, the UN World Food Price Index has fallen by 15% from its peak and is below the level before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Although UK food prices, in terms of the UK Consumer Price Index, are still accelerating and increased by 16.5% over the year to October. Food and drink prices have been rising at their fastest pace since 1977, with overall CPI at 11.1%, which is a 41-year high. Another source of inflationary pressure buried in the autumn statement is the planned 23% rise in the fuel duty rate in late March next year. It will increase petrol and diesel by 12 pence per litre. New car sales in Northern Ireland rose by over 14% year on year in October, but apart from last year, it was the weakest October of new car sales since 2008. It's a rise coming off low levels. Sales for the first 10 months of the year are up less than 3% year on year and remain 27% below the corresponding period for 2019. Positivity continues in the hospitality space, with Northern Ireland's hoteliers recording a record room sales for September. Room sales were up 14% year on year and almost 3% higher than September 2019 pre-pandemic levels. But if we look at the first 9 months of this year, room sales are still almost 3% below the corresponding period in 2019. September's room occupancy rates were 76%, which is 10 percentage points higher than last year, but still is below the record occupancy rates for 2016 and 2017 of 83%. Residential property transactions in October recorded their first year-on-year rise in over a year. Transactions were up 9.5%, but sales for the first 10 months of the year were down almost 18% year-on-year, but remain 5% above the corresponding 10-month period pre-pandemic. Looking at the commercial and industrial property market, there were 300 non-residential property transactions in October. That's flat on last year, with non-residential transactions year-to-date down almost 8% year-on-year. Turning to the labour market, unemployment rate remains low, with the number of employees on local payrolls at a record high in October. Job losses also remain low, with only 60 confirmed redundancies in October and fewer than 1,000 over the last 12 months. That's down 72% on the previous year. Meanwhile, all four sectors surveyed in the Northern Ireland PMI reported a rise in staffing levels in October. But despite these positive headlines, there are some signs of weakness. For example, claimant count unemployment rate, which is for those people mostly on unemployment-related benefits, it rose to a six-month high in October. Most worrying of all is the fall in the total of hours worked. Despite the lifting of lockdown restrictions, total hours worked has fallen in both the second and third quarters this year, and average hours worked, that's the total of hours worked divided by the number of workers, it fell to a record low of 31 hours per week. That is largely due to full-time workers reducing their hours, and outside of the pandemic, full-time hours have never been lower. And at 34.9 hours, they are almost 3 hours per week less than in the third quarter of 2019. Finally, on the earnings front, the median wages amongst HMRC employees increased by 6.3% year-on-year in October. That's well below the corresponding rate of CPI inflation at 11.1%. So, looking to the month ahead in December, the Bank of England's MPC is expected to raise its bank rate for the ninth successive meeting on the 15th of December. Financial markets are pricing in a 50 basis points or half a percent increase from 3 to 3.5%. That will be the highest rate since November 2008. But don't be surprised if we see yet another 75 basis points or 0.75% rise to 3.75%. Markets are currently pricing in a peak of between 4.5% and 4.75%. I don't think bank rate will go that high, and I'm expecting a peak of 4% and potentially 4.25%. The 15th of December will also see the first of a two-day strike by nurses in England, Wales and Northern Ireland. 20th of December is the second of the 2 days, and these strikes will mark the biggest walkout in the NHS's history. We're entering a season of industrial strike action that is set to continue into 2023. Also on the 15th of December, we get the Index of Production, which is mostly manufacturing output, and the Index of Private Sector Services alongside the Retail Sales Index, all for the third quarter of this year, and these are expected to show further declines in activity. These surveys make up the bulk of the Composite Economic Index, which will be released in January next year, and the third quarter figures are expected to confirm that the Northern Ireland economy is technically in a recession. That is two consecutive quarterly declines in Q2 and Q3. We have UK CPI for November, which should increase marginally on October's 41-year high of 11.1%. Also, watch out for food price inflation expected to exceed 17% year-on-year. And November's PMI for Northern Ireland is expected to show the private sector remaining in contraction for the seventh month running, with the equivalent survey for the UK already posting a fourth consecutive monthly fall. Finally, we'll be gearing up for the Christmas panto season, and that's no reference to our local politics, although we do have some people saying that our politicians will go back into government, whereas some are saying, oh no, they won't. I'll be at the Opera House, and we'll see whether Mae McFetridge weaves some of her cost of living crises jokes into her repertoire, or his repertoire. There's no shortage of material. Until next time, I am Richard Ramsay, and this was episode 23 of the Ulster Economics Podcast, The Fall, with Siobhan McAleer of The Mortgage Shop. You can stay up to date by following us on social media and the ulstereconomics.com blog.